Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself? You get what you
need. Hi there, I'm Carol Jorgensen-Sheets, and this is Sex Help with Carol the Coach. And, you know, this is a place that you can call in and ask any questions that you need to about your own personal life, your sexual addiction, loving a partner who's a sex addict, or even love addiction. So I want to encourage you to call into the show if you need anything, and that number is 646-595-3284. Now, I got an interesting email from a man I'll just call Tom, and I actually encouraged Tom to call the show at the beginning of the hour. So, Tom, welcome to the Sex Help with Carol the Coach show. Hello? Hello? Well, it sounds like Tom may not be available. Look, sounds like we have a connection problem. Let me tell you a little bit about what he was concerned about, and he can feel free to call in. You know, he is working a local 12-step program, and he feels like he's made a lot of progress, and he started visiting an individual therapist who was not a CSAT, and then for any of you that are listening to this show, you know that CSATs are certified sexual addiction therapists. But he had this bad experience because he didn't believe he was a sex addict. That the counselor did not believe that Tom was a sex addict. Obviously, the counselor did not know much about sex addiction. So Tom stopped going to the individual counselor, and he feels like all his progress has been coming from the 12-step program. So good for him that he's getting help, he's seeking out resources, and he feels comfortable with them. 12-step programs are wonderful. Now he says his wife has expressed disappointment because he's afraid seek out another therapist. He's been looking for one, but most of them do not take insurance, and given his last experience, he didn't want to spend thousands of dollars on something that was not going to help. And I can understand that. So his question to me is, Carol, what can a CSAT do for me that I can't do with the sponsor in a 12-step program? I'm open to the idea of visiting a local CSAT, but it would be very expensive. My wife has recently asked for a separation, and my budget is already strained. Any advice would be greatly appreciated. Now, that's a great question, and I'm sure that there are therapists all over the country that have some idea what sexual addiction is all about. And clearly would be able to help you. However, one of my feelings is that you want to get the biggest bang for your buck. You already said that there's, you know, CSATs are pretty expensive. They are. Now, some of them take insurance. I know I take insurance. So welcome to the show. Do you want to share a little bit about how you've been feeling with wondering what the difference is between a CSAT and another therapist? I am ready to take your call. Is this Chris? Well, we're just having a terrible connection problem. Okay, well, Tom says that, you know, he doesn't feel like his budget can accommodate a CSAT if they're full fee. And for some of you, you know, therapists cost a variety of money all over the country. You know, one of the things I know is in Indianapolis, if a therapist is self-pay, their average fee is about anywhere from $100 to $120. Now, there are some therapists, perhaps with PhDs, that are $175, $200, or even $250. But the average is between $100 and $120. Now, in other parts of the country, they may be $150 or $200 minimum. You've got to be able to afford your therapist. There's no doubt about it. So many addicts, especially sex addicts, have financial issues. And with those financial issues, that clearly means that you've got to be responsible in all areas of your life. So I'm glad that you're really wanting to budget and to be frugal. I wish you were on the air right now so that you could tell me why this is so important to your wife that you had a therapist. Now, see, I do believe in a good recovery program. You need a therapist to help heal the wounds and deal with stuff that your sponsor is not equipped to. I always say I defer any differences to the sponsor. You know, if the sponsor tells my sponsee or tells the sponsee something and I would have said something else, I let the sponsor make the final decision. I do not try to polarize him or her. However, I would never expect for a sponsor any way, shape, or form be able to deal with the emotional wounds that someone may have from sexual abuse, from physical neglect, from emotional abuse, verbal abuse, and so many addicts and so many partners have grown up with that kind of trauma. You know, so I see us working as a team. We're a whole committee. We're a whole community to help you. And so, again, I really emphasize how important it is for you to look for an opportunity to work with both. And again, a CSAT is a certified sexual addictions therapist, and they've been trained to handle your issues. So, you know, I hope you can call and talk with us at some point and share your feelings about why it's so important for your wife that you have a counselor. Maybe she feels like I do, that it will speed up your recovery. Maybe she knows of some trauma or some wounding that she knows a sponsor can't handle. It's one of those catchy things, Tom, because clearly a wife knows you better than you probably know yourself at times. And yet it is your program. Nobody should be working it but you. So I would encourage you and your wife to call the show together. Let's talk about it. Let's do some marital therapy on the air. How does that sound to you? What I want to know, how does it sound to know that you could really expedite your recovery? And again, I'm just so glad you're in 12-step groups. That's what counts. Okay, we're going to try this again. I've got another caller on the line. Welcome to the Carol the Coach Show. How can I help you? Well, all right. That's just not working. That is a shame. Now, tonight, it's going to be an exciting show. We're doing a topic that we typically have not done. It's understanding love addiction in the lesbian population. And, you know, sex addiction and love addiction look very much alike to the bystander who doesn't know the difference. Truly, there is a difference. And we are going to have Dr. Hostine on, who is an expert at working within the lesbian population to treat love and sex addiction. She has written a book, and it's wonderful. It's Lesbian Love Addiction, Understanding the Urge to Merge and How to Heal When Things Go Wrong. Now, you know, she says everyone makes mistakes in relationships at one time or another. However, sometimes they learn from those mistakes, and other times they don't. And when they return to old behaviors and cycle through failed relationship after failed relationship, and they get wounded and hurt in the process over and over and over again, they may find themselves addicted to love, which will leave them feeling unhappy, unsatisfied, unfulfilled, lonely, and worse. So her book, Lesbian Love Addiction, Understanding the Urge to Merge and How to Heal When Things Go Wrong, makes visible the elements of love addiction that many lesbians suffer from. And that is what is so important, is that clearly, you know, people who are love addicted, they know they're unhappy. They don't like their behavior. But unfortunately, what ends up transpiring is they keep repeating the same patterns over and over again. Now, I taught a course in love addiction, and what I know to be true is that women are more relational than men. That's how we were brought up. That's how we were socialized. That's how we live. And so they may be more likely to be love addicted, women, than men. As a matter of fact, men may be more likely to be love avoidant. So it makes sense in working with the lesbian population that Dr. Costine has found that this is a community of people that may be more likely to have to deal with this problem. Now, she says that some struggle by sexually acting out and others are serial relationship junkies, jumping from one relationship into the next. Some are addicted to the high of falling in love. You know, that produces that dopamine in the brain. And it makes you feel happy until the reality of the situation settles in. And then it's almost as if that's what the love addicted wants. They want to repeat infatuation that high, and they'll do anything to get it. Now, she has worked with love addicts for a long time, and that's why she wrote the book, that they have the urge to merge. And again, her book is Lesbian Love Addiction, Understanding the Urge to Merge and How to Heal When Things Go Wrong. So I'm excited to be talking with her. She's coming on the show at about 9:15 here in about another minute. And she is going to help us to understand how to help counsel lesbians who have this disorder. And if you are a lesbian sex addict or love addict, then this is right up your alley. She's an amazing person, and she's written a wonderful book. I highly recommend that you go to www.lesbianloveaddiction.com, and you can purchase the book there and find out more about the author, Lauren D. Costine. All right. So I'm hoping, Dr. Costine, is that you on the line?
Yes, it is. Hi.
Hi there. I am so happy to have you tonight. Your book is phenomenal. And this is something that I've been dealing with, love addiction and sex addiction, for a long time. And although we've talked to many people who had love addiction, we've never looked at the lesbian population. So tell me a little bit about what got you interested in this field with this population.
Well, I always love that question. Well, first of all, I'm an out lesbian, and then second of all, I'm in recovery for love addiction. So, you know, I have the personal experience. And then I'm also a psychologist, so, you know, I'm a research geek, and I like to figure out why things happen the way they do, and I wanted to know why I ended up with it, and then I wanted to help others because I was working with so many and seeing it in my practice and in my community, and seeing the suffering and seeing the denial around it, and thought, you know, we really need a book that addresses us specifically. And the third reason really was because, you know, all of the great love addiction books out there, like Pia Melody's and Kelly McDaniel and everything, were wonderful, but they're heterosexually oriented, and we have to translate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Obviously there are some differences, aren't there? I mean, there are similarities, but the lesbian community is a little bit different.
Yeah, there's a number of differences that I think are really interesting that, you know, the road to writing this book took me to cover. Namely, one of them was really studying the female brain. And as you were saying just a few moments ago, you know, there's these differences that we're discovering, you know, between the male, you know, male sex addiction and possible female love addiction. And it turns out to be true. We're not only socialized to be more relational, but our brains are wired to be more relational. So you get two women together. And, you know, yes, we'll have sex addiction, but we will also connect and become like instant girlfriends in a matter of days.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's, you know, not only are we addicted to the high, we need the high, and we have all of the underlying reasons to have this addiction, but our brain, you know, you get two women together and it's like, whoa. And on top of it, we produce something called oxytocin. So we're not only producing that dopamine, but women produce something in called oxytocin when we're falling in love, having sex, or when we're breastfeeding. And it is really, really feels good too. It's super intoxicating and highly addictive. So you get two women putting those two together. The high is hard to stay away from. So it creates this urge to merge. You know, it's like the feeling is so good when you're together, you just want to be together all the time. So you get this instant coupling.
So in some ways you're saying there's a predisposition to this, both chemically and socially, to want to have intense relationships, which, of course, can then create that urge to merge, and boundaries can be crossed, and people can have difficulty with that.
Yes, and this, you know, one loses their sense of self in it, you know, because you really like how you have all these things in common, you know, the good things about falling in love. And like you said, once the honeymoon wears off, once those chemicals wear off, and they do for everybody, maximum 2 years, I think in the lesbian community, we have so many so quickly where we wear it out much faster. And then suddenly you're staring at someone that you've kind of jumped into their world with, and you barely know them. And that's when the problems can start. And so that becomes too difficult. This is like, wow, this is really difficult. Now we're fighting all the time, and, you know, I've given up my friends, and I've lost my sense of self, and I don't even know who you are, and I don't know if I really like you because I didn't take the time to find out who you really are. And then you jump out of that relationship.
So since you were candid enough, and you talk about it in the book, to say, yes, I'm lesbian and I had a love addiction, at what point did you realize this is really unhealthy and I have to work at changing my behaviors so that I really get what I want out of life, which is a healthy, loving relationship?
Yeah, it's such a good question. I ended up having two qualifiers, Carol. So, because the first one didn't wake me up enough. but I had a really unhealthy relationship with a woman that was off and on and off and on for about 14 years. And eventually towards the end of that, you know, I was like, something is wrong with me, you know, and I'm in recovery from alcoholism too. So I had, you know, recovery from that. So it was like, I had been doing a lot of inner work for years and years and years, but I was in complete denial around this one. And then I was like, something is wrong with me. So I started picking up the books that I could find around. And then I started going to SLAA, but I was still in denial. Like, I wasn't ready. I wasn't done. And then I met my second qualifier, and I was all in, probably the most I'd ever been. And she was all in. And she was another love addict. You know, love addicts find each other, right? And it was a devastating relationship when it ended. Devastating. Like, the withdrawal that I went into was nothing I'd ever experienced in my life. Not even like losing my mother when she passed away prematurely. And it was, I thought I was going crazy. I had suicidal ideation. And, you know, this is after years and years of doing inner work on myself and dealing with all kinds of different trauma and staying sober and all of these things. So that really woke me up, and I was like, you know what, I'm a love addict. Like, I am a love addict. And for me, I'm fortunate enough when I have those really intense aha moments inside with myself in that moment and then with my spiritual belief system, it never stops. It never changes. I don't go back. So in that moment, I did jump in, getting all the help I could get. I went to on-site treatment center in Tennessee. I joined SLA. I got a sponsor. I started doing all the work I could, you know, and I started healing myself from this. And I never looked back.
And I'm glad you said that, because for some of our listeners, they may not know what SLA is. So I'd like to let you know that is sex and love addiction. And these meetings, SLAA, are really amazing because they're just like SA or SAA meetings. They're filled with love addicts who are supporting each other to break old behaviors. Now, did you know initially about these meetings, or did somebody inform you? Was that from your research?
Somebody informed me. Somebody told me, and I was like, wow, you know, in the beginning when I was still in denial, I was like, I need to go to those. And then I went for a while, and then I basically relapsed. You know, I was just intellectualizing at that point, meaning it was only going into my head, but not my heart, not my soul. I wasn't ready. I wasn't done. But it did plant seeds, planted some seeds, but I had to go. I had to hit, you know, a very serious bottom for it to get my attention. Because I am an addict of the highest order. I love all those addicting chemicals, you know, and I have some attachment issues, which is another part that my book talks about, which is, you know, we call it in psychology this insecure attachment. You either can have an anxious or an avoidant type, or ambivalent, but let's just go with the anxious and the avoidant. And basically, you know, when you attach to somebody, especially a love interest, you can be either anxiously attached, meaning, you know, you're insecure and you need a lot of validation and you want them to reassure you all the time that they're into you, or you're avoidant and you finally get them, so to speak. You know, they finally succumb to your, you know, seduction and then they kind of lose interest. So this actually starts very early on in our life. We can get this, we can develop this in relation to our caretakers and how we were treated by them. So you combine that with the chemicals and the physiological component and the way our brains are developed. And then the third piece is really growing up in a heterocentric and LGBT-phobic world. That's another trauma. Right, so we've grown up in a world
that you never feel love for who you are.
Exactly, and you may have a family that totally rejected you when you came out, or were indifferent, which also is traumatizing. The invisibility is traumatizing. You know, lots of things have changed in the last 10 years. I didn't expect it to go this fast. None of us that are activists in the field expected it to happen quite like this. It's been astonishing, but it doesn't mean that we're still not dealing with the trauma of what's been going on for thousands of years.
Okay, so you made a very good point that, you know, really it's not just how you grew up in your family, although attachment disorders are very, very common, and feeling abandoned and rejected at in early ages, and then obviously you kind of reenact that trauma over and over and over again until really believe that you're not worthy. And then the chemical high of being in love and being accepted for who you are, that is very, very addictive. Of course, it doesn't last, but that euphoric feeling is something that love addicts go after all the time, even when they know that they shouldn't be standing out in the rain looking at their loved one's window, waiting for them to come down, you know, from upstairs. I mean, it's like there's an intellectual sense that says, hey, you know, this is being crazy. You're freezing out here. Quit spying on her. But at the same time, that emotional pull to know what's going on and be in control and perhaps change it really interferes with functioning, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. You know, it makes one's life totally unmanageable, right? You know, and you're just in constant pain. It's very preoccupying. You know, it can keep you from really living a fulfilling life in all areas. And then you keep having one failed relationship after another or failed situation after another, and that's very shaming, you know. And in, you know, you have to keep saying to, say, your straight family that isn't very accepting of your sexuality anyway, well, you know, she and I didn't last again, you know, and it can bring up all that internalized shame for, you know, not being the right sexuality in the first place. And this can be very subtle. You know how those voices are. It can be very overt, but it also can be very subtle. You don't really know that's what your head is telling you, but it is. And again, that, you know, makes you feel smaller and less than, and your self-love, it decreases again. And you know, it just continues to spin that cycle, right?
Right, absolutely. So then, now let's flip over for, because you did the research, and I'm sure that you were able to see some real patterns develop that you could then apply to your clinical practice. So tell us a little bit about, what advice do you give lesbian love addicts? And I'm sure it could apply to any love addict, but specifically the lesbian population, like you said.
Well, you know, first of all, So first of all, of course, having to go through the withdrawal process, in my opinion, is pivotal. It's a pivotal initiation into getting to the other side. And that means cutting off whatever behavior you were doing. And you will actually go into physical withdrawal, and you know this, right, from your own work in sex and love addiction. You know the physical withdrawal is pretty severe, and
100%.
It affects your mind, body, and soul, right? But I think without it, and everybody's different. Mine lasted a very long time. My girlfriend's only lasted 2 months. I mean, everybody's is different, but it's a key component. And in the SLAA book, the Sex and Love Addiction Addict's book, he writes about how it's actually a precious experience. It doesn't feel like that at the time, trust me. There's nothing about it that feels precious. But once you get through it and onto the other side, there is a healing and a catharsis that happens because you stop engaging in whatever behavior it was that you were doing that kept you from really dealing with yourself and really healing the traumas that led you to addiction in the first place. And once you can stop engaging in all those behaviors, then you can start developing a healthy relationship, I say, with yourself first. And then you can start going into thinking about dating. So I always recommend everyone, once they've gotten through the withdrawal process, to really start developing a healthy relationship with oneself through therapy, coaching, group, you know, 12-step support groups, working with animals, exercise, self-care, whatever it is, you know, nature, meditation, mindfulness, so many incredible things out there that can really lead you to go within and start, you know, seeing yourself for who you are. Your truth will come out, who you really are will come out, and you can start, you know, that process of learning how to self-love. And I think that that is so important before you can actually love somebody else truly and receive love from somebody else. And also pick somebody, because don't forget, our pickers when we're active love addicts and sex addicts is not very trustworthy. And so
Absolutely.
You want to get to a point where you can start trusting your picker, and that's going to take time too, right? That's just going to take time. And it's so worth the effort. That's one thing I always can promise people. You know, I can give that hope, and I think you probably can do that, Carol, yourself, because of your own work. You know, being on the other side, we can offer that hope, right? It's like there is this other place on the other side that's completely different, and your life will be, it's not perfect. I've got other issues that I have to deal with, but I do not deal with love. I do not suffer from love addiction anymore.
I just think it's coming from you. You know, I worked with Dr. Patrick Carnes, and one of the things I asked him, because I wasn't a recovering addict, and so many sex addictions therapists are, and I said to him, do you think it's going to matter that I'm not in recovery for this? And he, you know, he just said, Carol, everybody's in recovery for something. And you don't have to have cancer to treat somebody with cancer. And yet I find that therapists who have had this, who have made it to the other side, who have made it their mission, I mean, you've obviously made it your mission to help lesbians resist the urge to merge in an unhealthy way. And so, obviously, I would think you have a great deal of success getting through this addiction.
Yeah, I think I do, because I did walk the walk as well as, you know, heal from it. But I also, I wrote this book for other healers, you know, because lesbian love addicts are going to come across your door, right? They're not necessarily going to know how to find somebody that maybe just has personal experience. So I am a big believer in just, you know, teaching anyone that really has a passion to work with the populate love addiction sex addicts to heal them, to read the books and so that you can help anyone that walks through your door.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute again. Your book, you can get that on Amazon as well as the website, www.lesbianloveaddiction.com. Is that correct?
Well, so the website actually gives you like a teaser. It has like a 7-day teaser of the intro. And then it can link you to Amazon, where they have the hard copy. And then the ebook is available at the publisher still, Rowan and Littlefield. And that's all on the website. And then the ebook is supposed to have already been available at Amazon. I'm not sure what the delay is with the publishers, but the ebook, you can get an ebook as well. So those are the two things that are available. And I do encourage folks who are very interested to go in and get that pre-teaser of the book, which kind of gives you an idea, and if it kind of grabs you, then please go buy the book. I think you'll find it very interesting.
There you go. So that's what you would advise our listeners to do. If they are concerned that they may have a love addiction, if this, you know, the desperation that you feel when you're not getting your needs met, and what we know is people with love addiction usually hook up with love avoidance. And so it's dance of come here, go away, come here, go away, come here, go away.
That's right. That's exactly right.
If you don't have a stable relationship with your partner-to-be, if you're not getting what I consider healthy relational interactions, take a look at this book and see if it doesn't fit.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And even, you know, if you don't turn out to be a full-blown love addict, this book is going to have a lot of tips in there that are just helpful in general. And I think you had mentioned something earlier about, you know, kind of what I can say to the community. See, because the lesbian community and the LGBTQ community in general, we don't have the same norms as the straight community, like you wait till marriage and da-da-da. Like, we couldn't even get married till just, you know, in June, right, for the whole country. And so we created our own norms that lived kind of in our own community that the straight world wouldn't even know about. And one of them was, you know, women could go move in together. I mean, the U-Haul joke is there for a reason, right? We, you know, my first girlfriend ever, years ago, we were living together within 2 months, you know, of meeting each other. So, you know, there are tips in here on healthy dating, you know, and how to take it slower so that you're taking care of yourself and you're getting to know the other woman before jumping in. And so for those that don't even say, well, I may be a love addict, I may not, I'm not entirely sure, but I'm having relationship issues, this book can be helpful too, because it talks about the female brain, it talks about attachment, it talks about growing up in a heterocentric world, it talks about what healthy dating is, it talks about how to have a healthy relationship with self. I mean, there's a lot of good tips in there. If that makes sense.
So in some ways, you give good, solid tips to people that may be having relationship issues, period. However, certainly with love and sex addiction or just love addiction, behaviors are more extreme. And
Yes.
You kind of take what you need and leave the rest, like just like you would do in a 12-step program.
Exactly. Completely
and
agree.
And so, you know,
you
mentioned some antidotes for helping people with love addiction, and they range from real healthy behaviors like exercise and creating a hobby to really looking at healing the wounds and breaking old patterns and going slow. If you were working with a love addict, what would 5 areas be that you would address with that lesbian who is suffering from love addiction?
Well, first I would go through the psychoeducational piece, and I would just really help them understand what they're going through. And then I would just really, you know, help them in their process without any shaming or any judgment. You know, just like whatever your process is, if you're going to go back to her because you're just not ready, then go back to her and we'll continue to work with that, you know. And then, but when you're ready, when you're really ready, when you have that epiphany or you have that awareness and you're truly honest with yourself and you're ready to make the changes, I would write up a plan with them about what we call the bottom line behaviors, you know, right? But, and you would just go and list what are these behaviors that you do that you know get you in trouble or are a way that you engage in your love addiction that aren't even necessarily with another woman. For me, I ended up considering myself a fantasy addict. You know, I would get like all excited about different actresses and movies and kind of, I could get my dopamine and oxytocin just going just that way, you know. And so just all the different things that I found my way to distract and get high and, you know, not deal with my life or my trauma or any of that, you know. So I would write those bottom lines out with them. And then I would help them engage in the healthy behaviors and help them deal with what comes up when they're not acting out in their bottom line behaviors, because as you know, this is when the stuff can get really tricky and challenging. And so being that support and help and helping them find outside resources as well to get as much support as possible. I remember for me, because I'm a processor, during this time I had to pick up the phone a lot and call safe people in what I call my sacred circle and sometimes just leave them voicemails, you know, of the way my head was spinning, just so I wouldn't, you know, break my bottom line. And then I would definitely get into helping them figure out that the health, you know, the healthy relationships with self pieces, what trauma they need to work on, you know, what issues with their family, that family of origin that they might not have dealt with. I also believe, you know, in how this gets kind of trapped in our body. So I'm really into working with folks and helping folks and lesbians figure out how to get it out of the central nervous system, help, you know, figure out where it may be trapped, not just in your head, but in your body, working in that way as well. And then eventually creating what I like, you know, what's called in SLAA, sober dating, and really having a plan. I remember when I first got into SLAA, and one of the things that made me so anxious was just thinking about dating again. You know, I'd be like, oh, my God, how am I going to do this? How is that even done? I don't know. All I know is how to do what I've always done before, which is, you know, this crazy way of doing things. So when I was so excited, and it made me feel a lot better when I knew that I was going to create a dating plan with my sponsor and my recovery buddies. And so I'm really big on that. And then I really stepped to that when I eventually went back into the dating world. And it was
very
grounded.
So what did that dating plan look like?
You know, not, okay, for me, for instance, not getting into texting, anything remotely emotional for a very long time. One of the things that I see is very common, and I had engaged in myself, was like instant, you know, very intimate texts all day long that would produce that kind of high and this false sense of intimacy, right? And that intensity, you know, kind of mistaking intimacy for intensity. So not doing any of that, keeping phone calls short in the beginning, really meeting the person in person, you know, and having dates, having them start slowly, gradually, and taking your time. And then maybe a text, it's not like you never text, but it would be used just to confirm the next date, for instance. Eventually engaging in some phone call, going to more and more dates, and definitely setting a limit of when you're going to eventually get physical and have sex. Because lesbians can jump into bed together very quickly because, as again I said, there's none of these social norms, and it creates that kind of bond too quickly. And so the idea is that you are being very careful with who you are considering getting intimate with and possibly developing a long-term relationship with. So those are some of the things that you can kind of write down and start following that are very helpful.
Yeah, and again, certainly almost everything you said could apply to anybody in dating. You know, it's really interesting how texting has affected the dating world. And actually, even just relationships. I have a couple right now, and they are getting separated and will likely get a divorce, and they have not talked since August. They haven't committed totally to a divorce, but they have only texted. And
right.
He's afraid, he's a sex addict, and he's afraid that if he pushes by phone calls or asking for face-to-face, it'll push her away. And I think she enjoys the separation of just texting and actually has started seeing somebody and I don't think wants to confront that. So texting is an easy way
uh-huh.
to not really deal with the person in your relationship.
Exactly. And it can really create a false sense of safety and intimacy that's not there.
Right. That illusion that I'm always talking about, you know.
Yeah.
Because I really do that with a lot of people who have love addiction. I say, now, let's talk about the good and the bad. What's one thing that you didn't like about how you were treated? And they'll write it down. And what's one good thing? And pretty soon they have a list of more bad than actual good. Really, if they don't look at that intellectually and spend time and realize that there's both sides of the coin, They stay with the illusion. They stay with the, held each other last night, 6 hours, or, well, didn't want to come over, but he did. And so I get that, you know, it's hard to get out of that illusion when you want so badly to be loved, and you're not getting your needs
exactly.
met.
Exactly. That's why it's so important to go back to creating that love with yourself first, right? So that you're not dependent on that from another person.
Right.
And then magically, and I'm careful using the word magically, but magically, once you do that, the love that you'll be able to give and receive from another person changes.
Interesting.
Really does, yeah.
So this teaser, I'm pulling it up right now as we speak. You say that, you know, it's a great way to go to www.lesbianloveaddiction.com. You get an excerpt from your book that helps people to decide, hey, could this be me? Do I need to read more?
Exactly. That's exactly what it's about. It's a little bit of an example of what the book's going to be like.
And then,
yeah, I was only allowed to give so much by the publisher, so it's like 6 pages, I think. But I was glad that I was able to do that because I want to give people an opportunity to give it a look.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So in kind of closing up for tonight, any lesbians out there that felt like they'd had sex or love addiction, and, you know, sometimes that's hard to differentiate because people have been taught, women especially, you can use sex to get love. And so their sexual behaviors look out of control, but what they're really looking for is love, is it not?
Yes. Yes, exactly. And the, you know, the love avoidance, and believe me, there's some really good love avoidance in the lesbian community. They're often very charming and seductive and sexy and, you know, they'll definitely use sex to get what they want, which is, you know, the high off of the chase, right? Initially, in the beginning.
Absolutely. And then you couple that with the fact that so many women in general have been molested in their lifetimes and have taken that situation where they were exploited and felt out of control and have turned it around so they have at least some control in their life by deciding when they're going to be sexual and how much they're going to be sexual. You know, that trauma reenactment that occurs can look a lot like sex addiction when, again, it's really about attachment and love.
That's exactly it. Exactly it. Yep. And, of course, you know, I do believe also in that codependency component that's added to the love addiction, too. I mean, you know, when you were saying just a second ago about, you know, having them write a list of the pros and cons of a new person they're meeting, you know, in my last relationship with my qualifier, I started seeing red flags. They popped up in my head, and I chose to ignore them. So when you're doing something like working with, you know, with someone like you, Carol, or reading this girl, or working with someone that's going to help you sort these things out, then consciously you're forcing someone to really look at those red flags and not ignore them. And I think that is so helpful and so important.
Absolutely. It is about having your eyes wide open. Now, your training, I mean, obviously you mentioned Pia Melody, the, you know, who wrote the Bible on love addiction. And you were right to say that's a good book, but it doesn't specifically speak to the lesbian culture. It's really about heterosexual relationships, although she does delve into some, you know, male and female gay relationships.
Right. But none of the books really do, you know, and that's, you know, we're kind of used to that. That's why we have to make those changes in our own community, you know. We have to write the book. So I, you know, I'm thrilled that I'm able to do that. And then for me, this component what is called, you know, lesbian affirmative psychotherapy. You know, it's lesbian affirmative, which is this idea of teaching the psychoeducational part about teaching what it's like to be a sexual minority growing up in a world that's heterocentric and that has been phobic for thousands of years, you know, and that's passed down. And, of course, it also depends on what area of the country you're living in. Some are very open, some are still back, you know, very repressed and very shaming. So, you know, you bring all of that in, but the bottom line is we've all been affected by that. And you know, that's an important component that my book does address that I think is very helpful to bring that into the one's awareness. Yeah.
Now, I suspect that you have a full practice.
I do. But right now I actually moved out of that, and I am the chief clinical officer of a drug and alcohol treatment center. And I am working on creating, I have an LGBT affirmative track in one of our treatment centers in Hollywood, and we're going to be doing some tracks, we call them tracks, so like within the core treatment center, we're going to be having some that address love and sex addiction as well. So I'm writing the curriculum for those, creating them, and kind of overseeing those clinical programs. And that's been an exciting shift for me. I never anticipated that I'd do that, but I really saw this opportunity, and the founder gave me this idea. He's like, you know, here you have a chance to really impact thousands of people at one time. And I thought, okay.
Oh, I bet. If somebody wanted to work with you or consult, do you do any Skype? Do you do any phone coaching?
Yes, I can definitely do some Skype and that kind of
thing. All right. So how can they reach you if they want to make an appointment?
So I have a website. It's drlaurencoffteen.com, and I have a work phone number, which is 310-399-9006.
Very good. Because I'm sure there will be some people that want to work with an expert, and, you know, not only have you written the book, but you obviously have recovered yourself, and that's, again, I believe makes people feel really comfortable and hopeful, because look at how well you're doing. I mean, I bet your boundaries are the best.
Thank you.
I bet they are. And you know what we all know is that we teach what we needed to learn, and this is a beautiful thing about it goes around. So I am talking with Dr. Lauren D. Costin, and she wrote a book called Lesbian Love Addiction: Understanding the Urge to Merge and How to Heal When Things Go Wrong. She talks about love addiction in the lesbian community and what you need to do to create healthy behaviors as opposed to recreate the unhealthy ones. So I want to thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. And it's really amazing. The book is wonderful. And I urge anybody who has any questions about love addiction, especially in the lesbian community, to take a look by going to the teaser, lesbianloveaddiction.com, and getting to read a little bit of it. Well, thank you so much for your wisdom.
Thank you so much, Carol. It was such a pleasure talking to you. Such a pleasure.
Oh,
what a wonderful
you.
Show you
yeah,
have.
Well, you,
thank you for having
with
me.
With really high recommendations, that Rob Weiss told 1,600 of us how good your book was. So he's an amazing guy, too.
Oh, he is. Well, he is a major reason that this book got written, he and I. He, you know, put the bug in my ear, so I am grateful for him. Grateful for him, totally. Thanks, that's great. Hi, Rob!
There you go, and he listens to the show, too. So listen, when you're writing more books, you give me a call so that we can preview them here on Sex Help with Carol the Coach, okay?
Oh, I will, because I have other books in this head, so I will be calling you.
I can tell. I could tell when I was reading this. I thought, she's got many more books inside of her. I mean, it's just readable. So thanks again so much, and you have a wonderful night.
Thanks, Carol. You too. Take care.
All righty. Talk to you later. Okay, we were talking with Dr. Lauren Castine, and she wrote that book, Lesbian Love Addiction, Understanding the Urge to Merge, and How to Heal When Things Go Wrong, specifically for the lesbian community. Go to the teaser, Lesbian Love Addiction, and see if that doesn't sound like you. You know, I know that a lot of my sex addicts do have love addiction, and she does a really good job at defining that. So, I really appreciate all of you for listening in. You know, this is really a show that highlights philosophies and different experts all over the world, and I feel really blessed to be able to do it. It's on top of a long day where I see about 10 clients, and then I run a group of about 9 men, and as any group does, I definitely learn more from them than I can teach. So that's the beautiful thing. And I think you've heard me say before, I've done over 2,000 women's groups, not sex addicts groups, but just women's groups in general. And the men in my groups are so faithful, so emotional. They want so badly to work on empathy. And, you know, I know I was talking tonight with some of them, and we were talking about how important the recovery tools were, the 8 out of 10 recovery tools. And a couple of them spoke up right away, and they said, you know what, the recovery tools are important. We were talking about how can you show your partner that you've really changed. And I said, just work those recovery tools. When she sees you working those recovery tools, she'll begin to believe the changes she sees. And a couple of the guys said, yeah, recovery tools are important, but more important than that, it's how it transforms you. And that's how I want to leave tonight's show. I want to give you some hope that truly you can be the best person imaginable when you do the work, when you follow a 12-step program, when you experience spiritual transformation, and when you develop skills like real, genuine listening and being authentic and honest and empathy. You know, you can have a better relationship than you could have ever imagined and be the person you truly want to be. But you do have to work the program. You have to invest in you. So that's the hope I leave you with tonight. As I say at the end of every show, there will only be one of you at all times. So fearlessly, fearlessly have the courage to be yourself. And we'll catch you next week for another fascinating show, Sex Help with Carol the Coach. Have a great week.